I have Janice Fairbanks here to talk to her, with her about her book, Sugar Bush Babies, Stories About My Ojibwe Grandmother. Thank you so much for being with us today, Janice.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
So my kind of softball question here is, what prompted you to write this?
Probably my grandmother, because it's stories I've been writing all of my life. They've just recently come together in a book and been published. So a lot of things prompted me to write those original stories, and it was just the way I grew up, I guess,
Were
going
you?
from a reservation to a city and then back to a reservation and back and forth. And all of my experiences along there, and they all tied right back to my grandma. So I
Were you
guess
always
that's my
considered a writer then,
inspiration.
or?
Oh, I was considered a writer since second grade.
Oh my God.
Yes, I was. Because I mean, I did start storytelling, writing my own stories in second grade. And of course, they evolved a little bit beyond my second grade abilities. But my classmates liked them, so that was good enough for me.
Were you always a big fan of writing fiction more, or like what was like kind of writing that you gravitated towards?
I like right now I like history.
Okay.
And in a way, my writing has always been history. It's been the history of the Ojibwe people. So and it's fact-based. It's all actual stories of things life. So for my reading material, I do like reading biographies, autobiographies. I like reading about people to kind of see what motivates people or what turns them off. You have to know those things to get along with people. And I really like people. I mean, I want to get along with people, so I want to make sure I don't offend anybody. Sometimes I probably do, but it's not intentional.
I'm curious where the title Sugar Bush Babies comes from.
That was my grandma. My grandma was a Sugar Bush baby. She was actually born at Sugar Bush Camp, and Sugar Bush is when the season turns in March to go, usually in March, to go out into the woods, tap trees to make the maple sap. And back in those days, when she was born in 1895, it was the woman's job to do that. Now everybody does it, men, women, children, but it was women's work. And so she was out there and with her mother, not born yet, but in the middle of all that, then she was born on March 11th at Sugar Bush. So when she told me the story of her birth, she referred to herself as a Sugar Bush baby. So that just kind of stuck with me that, yeah, she's a Sugar Bush baby, and she continued tapping trees well into her old age. All her life, she was Sugar Bush baby.
That sounds like is it a pretty strenuous labor, do you think, or is it pretty
It's
strict?
a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and it takes time to tap the trees, and then you have to wait for the sap to run and fill the little. In those days, she used coffee cans and cedar taps. Now they have all kinds of fancy equipment and tubing and everything. Well, back then she didn't. She was walking the woods and carrying those pails, and she had a couple of her regular people that came to Sugar Bush to help her. She had her Uncle Mike, and then there was a guy named Tommy Stevenette. Those were her two regular helpers, and they did a lot of the heavy work, but she did quite a bit too. Pouring the sap from the pails onto the fire and watching that and making sure it didn't burn as it boiled down. So yeah, it's a lot of labor, and it goes on until they say until the frogs start singing. When you hear the frogs start singing, it's time to stop that tapping the trees.
Oh, that's so cool. My next question is, there's a lot of photos. One of my favorites, I think it's in the prologue, and especially towards the end in the epilogue with like your grandmother in the jingle dress. What was it like going through all these photographs to include or exclude? Can you describe that a process?
Well, I have a collection in that picture. has always been one of my favorites. It's on my wall. It's always been hanging on my wall, that one of my grandma. And when I got to be about the same age, I put on my jingle dress and I posed like her.
Oh
And
my
that's in the book too. They're across from each other. That younger version of me is across from my grandma. And they were about the same age when those pictures were taken. So, oh, what was it? You asked me, what was it like going through all those pictures? Actually, the publisher asked me for certain illustrations. So all I had to do was go through and find illustrations that fit what they asked for.
Perfect.
It wasn't too hard. I got direction on that.
Yeah. Were there like ones that you really, really wanted to include? Did you find like while you're going through these photographs, you're rediscovering some photos that you're like, oh, I didn't know about this, or things like that?
The pictures of my elementary years were kind of a surprise. Somebody sent me that picture that it's in the book. And third, it was at Franklin anyway. I had one from Jackson. I don't know, one of them wasn't good enough to go in the book. Oh, not high enough resolution. When I say not good enough, it wasn't high enough resolution. So that one didn't get in there, but one of them did. And that one was sent to me by one of my classmates who was in the elementary school with me.
Oh, that's.
So that was a surprise.
I think what was because I like when it comes to like memoirs or talking about other people or stories, what was your friends, family's reaction to you writing this book? Were they kind of stoked, kind of shocked, or were they like, oh, this is just a natural progression for your literary career?
My friends' families? I'm
Or
not
like
sure
your
I
friends.
understand the question.
Like your friends and family members, when you're writing this book or you're telling them that you're writing this memoir.
They were remembering, it was helping them remember some of their own childhood memories, which is good. They told me stories that they're their stories, so they didn't get into my book, but I told them they should write a book. There's some interesting thoughts out there. And then I've heard from a lot of my friends that heard some of the stories, because I've done occasional readings just because I had these stories all these years. They just weren't in a book, they were in a manuscript. So I would read from them from time to time, and that would have the same effect on them. They would remember their grandmother in particular. That came up pretty often. Oh, I remember my grandma. I wish I would have visited her more. I wish I would have talked to her more. There's a lot of that, and that's just so important. If you've got your ancestors right there, spend time with them and talk to them. It's way more interesting than anything I can think of. That was just it's just my outstanding memory of my life was spending conversation time with my grandma.
This book actually inspired me to talk to my grandmother a little bit. She's in her mid-80s. She's my last living grandmother. And she did grow up on a reservation in upstate New York. And I never really asked her questions about it that much. And so thank you from a personal note, because that's inspiring me to ask her questions about like what it was like growing up in rural upstate New York. So thank you for that. I don't think I would have thought much about it.
Was it a Mohawk reservation by any chance? What was the name of the reservation?
It was a Tuscarora, I believe. And our family is
Oh,
very,
Tuscarora, yeah.
yeah, our family's very white. We don't have indigenous culture, but she somehow grew up on a reservation. I don't know exactly how that happened. And then they moved closer to Niagara Falls, Buffalo area, after she was a
Okay.
kid. So I thought that was
Is
kind of.
your grandmother Tuscarora?
No, her
Oh,
she's
she's a
second gen
Scirocco.
Polish. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All
Yeah,
right.
it was weird. From what she told me, it was all the reservation Native American kids would they would just, like it was 50% Polish and like other Eastern European kids, and then the other half were Native American reservation kids, and there are some like three or fourth cousins removed on my side of the family that I know still live on the reservation, but I never actually met them because the family lineage just kind of died down like that. But I thought that was fascinating because I like never actually asked her questions about the What was
Well,
it
you
like?
better start
Oh,
asking
yeah.
before you'll think of them later and it'll be too late. But ask them while you can.
Yeah. What I was really struck by in the book was the humor in a lot of things, especially, I think one of my personal favorite passages was, I believe it was you reminiscing about how blue-eyed kids can see. And I thought that was very, very funny. Was humor like a part of this process as well, or
Humor is a part of my life. I love to play with words, and somebody will say something to me, and I'll say something else back. And I know what they said, but my dad used to do that too. And so it was kind of a learned behavior, but I thought it was fun, so I just carried it on. Yeah, I play with words a lot.
Oh, God, there's so much. I really love that passage. I think it's so funny. What one of the things I really wanted to talk about was in your biography, you also do a lot of work preserving and revitalizing the Ojibwe language. How does that work tie into this book? And I want you to kind of elaborate more on that.
I might have used a few Ojibwe words in there, but it was mainly written in English. I have done work based on those stories that is all in Ojibwe, or it's bilingual, and it's a series of cartoons that are found on the Fond du Lac Reservation language and culture website. They're out there as resources, and they're little cartoons. I'm going to bring those into the presentation I'll be doing later this month with the Minnesota Indian Education Conference. They invited me, they picked my book to put in the conference bag. So I thought I'll go down there and sign books and I'll tell them a little more about it. But a little more about it includes that I had already done other stories. There might be a story or two in my book that's also in the cartoons. Certainly will be reference to it. But they're just little, no more than 5-minute cartoons, and they're bilingual. There's a little book that goes along with them. People can read them either in English or in Ojibwe or both with subtitles. So not sure I answered your question. I've got to talking about that. I forgot what your question is.
You're good. I'm curious, how did you get into like this very laborious pro of like preserving the Ojibwe language? I'm kind of curious, like,
It's a struggle. How did I get into it? My grandma, of course. Everything leads back to grandma. She taught me words when I was just, a little kid. I didn't really know what she was saying, but then I figured it out because she wouldn't say it in English. And it's just real simple thing. Billy Sinin. And okay, Billy Sinin. And here she's setting the table, putting food on. Okay, I connect. That means come and eat. So I learned by listening to her and watching what she was doing, and she just made it known what she meant. And I don't know, when I was in the city, big city, Detroit, Michigan, and I was executive director of an Indian center. We had Indians from all over the country. It wasn't just Ojibwe, but they wanted to learn Ojibwe. We had a Navajo student coming to Ojibwe class. We had some Oneida students coming to Ojibwe class. Well, then we figured, well, they're across the border. Why don't we get a teacher from over there to come and teach them Oneida? And we have an Ojibwe instructor, kind of built in. I mean, I couldn't do everything, but I could organize it. And if the instructor was absent, then I could step in. And it's more of a process of finding the resources to support it than to doing the actual work. Like even after I stepped off the I retired from being the Anishinaabemowin coordinator for Fond du Lac, and I took a year to do some other things, including writing this book. And then I went back, and they, lo and behold, elected me to be the chair of the committee. I was going to go, and I just wanted to be like secretary or something. Minutes and all that kind of stuff, but they wanted me as chair. So I'm in my second term as chair, and I'm trying to get somebody groomed to step into that. Maybe that'll happen, and maybe Maybe it won't happen in the near future. At some point, it will happen. But I just keep pushing, and all the speakers I know, I try to sign them up to do presentations, or point them toward opportunities where they can present, because there's a lot of really good second language learners, and now they're teachers, and they just need to keep doing that, just keep recycling through and build it up, and that's what they're trying to do.
That is so beautifully said. Are you excited for the future of preserving the Ojibwe language and culture? Are you excited, like looking forward in the near future to like newer generations?
I'm looking forward to people not losing momentum, which from what I've seen since I've been back in Minnesota, it's been 10 years now. There's a lot of regional speakers, and they know each other, and they cooperate with each other, and they lift each other up. And that, to me, is a huge sign of hope. I love that. And I go to any of their presentations as I can. I had to miss 2 nights of our storytelling here that just took place last week because I had other meetings, and I thought, well, maybe I'll get out early enough to go. Well, I got out at 6:15, and it started at 6. So to get from where I was over there, by the time I get there, it'd be almost over. So that kind of stuff is disappointing, but at least I know they went on with it, and they're doing it, and they're organizing it.
Oh, that's so cool. I want to kind of go back to the book a little bit where you talk about walks with nature and grandma and all these other, definitely like the ties of her being in nature. Do you think that influenced you as a person quite a bit as well?
Oh, it definitely did. If I hadn't had those walks out in nature and her encouragement to tell me about it and what I saw, I would not have the level of attention to detail that I have today. And it's not just out in the woods, it's everything around me. It's just hypersensitive to any little detail. And that includes body language. I could look at people, and if they're saying one thing and doing another, I detect it. So I kind of know where most people are coming from when they're interacting with me.
Did you have a favorite story that your grandma told you, or one that you're like, this is one I want to be heard over and over and over again?
That was her story of Sugarbush. Her story of being born at Sugarbush. I never got tired of it, and neither did she. And if she would not tell me, for a while, she didn't mention it, say, Grandma, where were you born? Where exactly were you born? Or try to make her add that little turnabout's fair play, make her add a little more detail to what she's telling me. But she would tell the story, and she really liked it.
All right, my next one of my last questions here. I think I have two more. What is your favorite memory of your grandma? If you had to pick a handful, I know it's very difficult for a personal question, but if you had one that's just like this story or this memory really embodies who my grandma was as an individual, if you had to pick one.
Well, there was these quiet days we had when we did laundry. We did laundry outside the tubs. We had to haul the water and get it all ready and then hang it on the line. And that, it was just an all-day process. So while the laundry was drying, we didn't just sit there and wait. She was knitting a pot holder, and she had spare yarn and spare needles and waited for me to ask and say, come over here, I'm going to teach you how to do this. I said, Grandma, what are you doing? Oh, I'm making a pot holder. I said, oh, can I try? So she had a chair for me already. We always had the same chair as we sat on outside the door. So I went and sat by her, and she gave me the needles and showed me how to start, and here, do this and this, and showed me the stitch, and I did. We sat there, and we were just talking. I was watching what I was doing, watching what she was doing, and she didn't say much. She just stopped, and we then she was done. So she finished hers, and I said, I think I'm done too. But I looked at mine, and it was about the size of a Those things you put on their cups. What do you call those?
Oh, like a
You
coaster?
set your coffee mug. Coaster. Mine was only about the size of a coaster. Hers was the size of a regular pot holder. And I looked at it and I looked at hers and I said, "Oh, Grandma, I can't do it. Oh, it's miserable. I failed. I can't do it." And she picked it up and she, "Here, let me see that." And she took it and she turned it and then she turned it sideways, looked at it. She said, "Oh, it's just right. Here, let me put a corner on it and we're going to hang it on the wall side by side." I said, "But yours is bigger." She said, "That's okay. You just knit you're a little tighter than I do, but this will work." So she never agreed with me that I was a failure. She looked at it and said, "This is good. This will work." And so they hung there in our little kitchen, side by side, my little coaster next to her pot holder. But it had a little handle on it, just like hers. So yeah, that is one of my favorite memories that really embodies who she was and how kind she was. She was just kind and such a teacher.
Oh, that's such a beautiful, that's such a beautiful note, a beautiful story. I really enjoyed listening, to recount that. And I think my final question is based off of the story you just told me, and any other facts that you would want people when they're reading the book to know about your grandmother, or in Ojibwe culture in general.
Well, Grandma was really a smart woman. She was born in 1895, but during her young years and growing up years, Native people weren't really hired for anything. It didn't matter how smart they were. They could be laborers, they could be house cleaners, domestics. And I remember reading a letter to her that somebody wanted her to come and be their house cleaner, because she had high recommendations from somebody else. And I thought, oh my God, my grandma was so smart. I don't know if she took that job or not. She was a young lady when that letter came to her. But in her later life, she was the first woman on our reservation business committee. She is very smart. She worked at the organizing rights for Native people even before she got on that committee. And long after she got off of it, she was a human rights activist. That's what I want people to know about her. She was a true matriarch. She looked after her family and she looked after the entire tribal nation.
Oh, that's such
So
a
that's who my grandma was.
that's so sweet. I wish I could have met your grandma. I'm really
Yeah.
grateful that you're able to. I'm very grateful that I'm able to meet your grandmother through you and through your book, Sugar Bush Babies. Thank you so much, Janice, for being with us today, on KFAI 90.3 FM on Ride On Radio. It was such a pleasure having you on the air. And you're going to be at a conference this March 10th, right? Is
It's March 18th through 20th.
18th through
Yeah.
20th. All right,
18th
perfect.
through 20th. Yeah.
Oh gosh,
Well, thanks for jogging all my pleasant memories.
yeah, thank you so much.